The talk tonight is kind of a continuation of what we've been talking about, working through the steps of Anapanasati, and it's a little report from the inside, or recently inside the retreat bubble, because on retreat last week, I focused on the practice that we've been doing here. So I made, I was doing a form of what you could think of as concentration practice or samadhi practice. So just staying with one thing the whole time, which was the breath and the whole body generally, and really using the sequence of steps known as Anapanasati as the basis for that practice. So so it was lovely to go back into, you know, in a full-on kind of way, this thing that we've been talking about for a couple months, and I've been giving y'all instructions in, and really delighting in this aspect of meditation practice recently. So that's what I did. So here's a little refresher then on those steps, with you know, a little bit of kind of report from the field, and the emphasis, like I wrote about today, is a little bit on how we might think about thinking in relation to concentration and meditation and mindfulness. So Anapanasati, mindfulness of in and out breathing, is, as we've been discussing, laid out in a series of 16 steps, four sets of four. And before the first set, there's the basic instruction to bring the body into a comfortable, upright posture, same as in the beginning of the mindfulness instructions, and to bring the attention to the in and out breathing, to be mindful when the breath comes in, mindful when the breath goes out. So that's the basic instruction that underlies the whole thing. Contained in that instruction is the basic qualities that support stabilizing attention. So if I'm aware or mindful as the breath comes in and out, there must be a quality that is doing that awareness. There's mindfulness itself. So the quality of knowing what's happening, right? Remembering what I'm doing, mindfulness, is present. But there's also implied here a staying with the sequence, because if you're mindful as the breath comes in and it goes out, and of course you know what the breath does, it just does that over and over and over again forever until you die, then you are staying with an ongoing wave, essentially, right? So there's already an aspect of being with continuity here. The first instruction then, so with that basis in continuity, you establish that, okay, I know that I'm breathing in, I know that I'm breathing out. There's a turning of attention toward breathing, and that already also means that we're turning the attention away from external sensory engagement. So it's not a meditation on hearing or on, you know, seeing or orienting to the space around me. And it's not an open mindfulness where the breath is like an anchor, but I'm open to the attention resting on other things. I listen for a while to the rain, and then my attention goes to being a little hungry, and then I think about something, and then I come back to the breath. It's not that. That is a kind of using the breath as an anchor for more of an open awareness kind of mindfulness. And that's lovely practice. Right, especially if you have some foundation in mindfulness with breathing as a concentration practice, using it as an anchor for a more open sensory inquiry is a beautiful kind of vipassana. So that's an insight practice, right? Because what you're going to see if attention is open to noticing that, you know, my attention is drawn to the rain and then to a sensation and then to another sound and then to a thought and then to a memory and then to a smell, the insight that comes there is that our experience is marked by impermanence and discontent. That's what we see when you see the attention pinging around. So that's why it's an insight practice, to let the attention be open in that way. That's different from the focus of Anapanasati as a concentration or samadhi practice. And so in samadhi practice, I'm restraining the attention from its tendency to bounce around. And instead, I'm extending a continuity of awareness connected with one thing. In this case, initially it's connected with breathing. Now we're going to build on that. So the first four steps, the first tetrad, as we've been talking about, are knowing the long breaths and knowing short breaths, and then breathing in and out, experiencing the whole body, and then breathing in and out, calming the whole body or settling the body. So when I'm doing this in meditation, I just do this as a kind of sequence or a little exercise. Like I start with long breaths and just really take a deep in breath, hold it for a moment, really a long, slow out breath, do several of those. So I'm really thinking about Anapanasati as not so much a mindfulness of breathing practice. That name makes it seem like mostly what I'm doing is I'm observing. It's a little bit mental. It's very witnessy. And often we think of mindfulness as very witnessy. I'm not engaging, interfering, I'm just watching. My interpretation at the moment of Anapanasati is that it's not very observational at all, that it's actually very engaged. And what you're engaging in is cultivating energy. It's really a kind it's really a yogic practice. Yogic meaning I'm intentionally engaging with my somatic energetic system to alter it, to really change my state. That's what I'm going to call kind of yogic kinds of practices. So it's a yogic energy practice. So we begin with long breaths, and I'm using the long breath to really wake myself up and move the breath energy through the body, get some of the stuckness out, do several of those. And then the second step is short breaths. And so you can just use that to mean let go of doing intentionally long breaths and come into a natural breath, let the body just breathe in whatever way it likes. Or you can really go short breaths very particularly, and I'll do that by focusing on, this is getting a little bit ahead of the second step, but I'll focus on stilling the body, getting really relaxed, and I won't try very hard to breathe in. And if you don't try very hard to breathe in, you'll just get a shallow little in-breath because you're not going to pull on the musculature of the belly. You're just leaving the belly pretty relaxed. Belly, solar plexus are relaxed, so the diaphragm's going to pull the breath in a little bit, but not a ton. So that's a short breath. And so you do those, that can often really kick you into a different state because you're mixing then breath energy with a very relaxed body. And this is the gist of the whole first tetrad. So you come into short breaths of some kind, and then the third step is breathing in and out, aware of the whole body. And some people interpret this to mean breathe with the whole body, so you can feel the breath movement through the whole body. That's kind of Tanisaro Bhikkhu's method. I like that a lot. Energetically, I think that's really groovy. But I'm also into just keeping the sense of awareness of breathing going, and then just include the sense of the whole body. So I don't need to push hard to like feel the pulsation of the breath down in my feet. Like sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. But I don't mind so much. What I want is I want to have a somatically presenced sense of the whole body. So in the meditation, I use these two words, proprioception and interoception. These are like sort of modern nervous system words. Proprioception is the word for knowing the shape of your body in space from the inside. So like if I close my eyes and I make my hands into a shape, I know what shape they're in. I can feel it. So that's proprioception, is the sense that gives you that, right? And there's certain states of being intoxicated or certain neurological states where you can lose that and you not know what shape your body's in. The proprioception can be strong or weak, present or absent. And then interoception is a term used by the neuroscientists and somatic types to refer to sensing. So it's like physical sensation, but it's sensing the inside of your body. So like when you sense that you're hungry, or you sense a kind of contraction in the viscera, or you feel energy in the pelvis or the heart center or inside the throat, sensing the inside of the body is interoception, and thus the name. So you're doing a bit of both of those in the third step. Feel the whole body. So I'll include the proprioceptive sense of feeling the shape of the body, but then I'm also feeling kind of the whole sensation field of the body, which includes the inside. And I do like doing this particular practice with my eyes closed. I'm really just in the energetic field, but you can do it with eyes open as well. You're kind of just gazed down or in a soft visual space. So feeling the whole body, breathing, already it's shifting away from observing the breath toward a kind of cultivation of bodily energy, right? You get that sense. This is one of those places where breath, right? And so the Pali is pana, and the more familiar Sanskrit parallel is going to be prana. And just like the word, the English words spirit and inspiration and respiration, the word prana in Sanskrit and pana in Pali, refers to both the physical movement of air in and out of the body, but also to the subtle movement of breath energy through the body, or the subtle movement of energy, period, through the body. So breath is life, is energy. So now whenever we're talking mindfulness of breathing, what we're really saying is mindfulness of life force moving in the body. And it has a gross manifestation as physical air, and it has subtle manifestations as winds that move through the various channels. And so, and the energetic channels that move through the body, the energetic directions, are called winds. It is wind moving in the body. So in the South Asian system, that's the element that's understood to be moving. So already we're shifting toward this being really an energetic cultivation practice. And then in the fourth step, there's the Pali pasabhyam, and pasadhi is to become tranquil, tranquility. And I'm making tranquil the chitta sankhara, or sorry, the kaya sankhara. I'm getting ahead of myself. So step three was whole body, sabba kaya, sabba whole, kaya body. Step four is tranquilizing the body. And it doesn't say tranquilize the whole body. It doesn't say sabba kaya. It says tranquilizing the kaya sankhara. I'm not going to do too much of the Pali, but this one's interesting. Sankhara is volitional formations or karmic formations. And it has to do with choiceful or intentional action. So like when I intend to reach my hand down and pick up the water glass, that's volitional, right? I did it on purpose. And so sankhara is a really complicated word. It appears in the aggregates. It appears in dependent origination. It's the stuff that is the result of volition moving. So volitional bodily movement is like moving on purpose, right? So one interpretation of the fourth step is relax the body. That's the easiest kind of simple way we can talk about it. Contact breathing with the whole body and just relax, just a reminder, relax your body. That's really nice. But relax the body isn't entirely what Kaya Sankara really means. You could also interpret it as stop doing any volitional movement. So you know when you're sitting in meditation and there's little impulses that come all the time, little impulses to adjust your posture or to kind of move, squirm a little bit or to sort of itch something or move your hand or adjust your neck or even like get blinky or impulses to move your body in some way will come at some point. Step four may be saying, don't follow those. Just let those impulses go by. And this is a very particular discipline in itself, to not respond to an impulse to move. That it takes some doing. I interpret it both as that and relaxing. And those, they really come very much together. It's like the impulse to move, it is a kind of muscular stimulus, right? Right? The brain or wherever they come from sent a little electrical ping to the muscle, and the muscle's like, I want to do a thing. And then, mindfulness, the inner mindfulness coach that's working the steps overrides that and says, no, we're not doing it. Let the impulse go by. And for a moment, it's like, oh, but I want to do the thing. And you're like, we're not doing it. And then you let it pass. And it's a little bit like letting a sneeze pass. And you're just like, oh, yeah. And then it goes. So I don't know. That's very mysterious why that happens, but it can work that way. So you're relaxing and you're relaxing the volitional impulses. What this will do is you've got a sense of the whole body and you're breathing and you're relaxing and now you're not moving. And what relaxing and not moving and sensing the whole body is going to do is also increase the intensity of this internally directed attention. And when you, wherever attention goes, intensity increases. It's always that way. Maybe it's not always that way. It's often that way. So we are stirring up and putting a kind of container on bodily energy, right? So already, so the energy is going to start growing. So then naturally, the next step, as we move into the second tetrad, the second group of four steps here, the next step is rapture. The Pali word is piti. And the step after that, step six, is happiness or bliss, sukha, ease. So we have these two qualities, rapture, sometimes translated as joy, but I like rapture because it's more somatic. I think piti really is physical, primarily. And then sukha is more the emotional ease, happiness, blissful states. So here comes rapture, right? Who doesn't want more rapture? It's partly why I like the word so much, is like it just sounds like what you want. You want some rapture here. Life is hard, people. Get some PT going on. And this is, I think this is core to the entire Dharma in a way that some of us talk about kind of endlessly, but it's worth talking about endlessly because we North Americans, some of you are not that, but some of us North Americans, we are still a kind of puritanical culture that doesn't really like pleasure. As much as you can do a lot of hedonistic stuff here, it's often in a kind of constricted, tight sort of way. And there's a and you know, as much kind of, get your sexy on kind of, material is in this culture, we don't actually do very well with the subtle, beautiful states of sensuality, which is, the beautiful, deep, grounded, orgasmic states. They're a little outside the mainstream in a certain way. To, you know, it takes some doing to relax into big bodily pleasure. And it takes some overcoming of hang-ups and, you know, all sorts of things, traumas. We're a little traumatized about pleasure around here. I say we. I don't know who you are, but I see a lot of it. So I'm going to say we. Some of we. The Buddha was too. And a lot of folks around him were these ascetics who really believed that torturing the body was a really reasonable way to come to spiritual purification. And when the Buddha realized that that was not the way, he had been doing this kind of self-torturing for many years, and he was almost dead of starvation and you know, really bad stuff to the body. And he realized that he wasn't getting any closer to liberation doing it. So he was on the wrong path. And when he thought about what the right path could be, he remembered being a child at a kind of agricultural holiday. There was some festival. And he had walked away from the crowd, and he was sitting alone at the edge of a field on a beautiful spring day under a rose apple tree. And he said that his attention was not pulled outward, and completely content and resting in easeful seclusion, he entered and remained in a beautiful meditative state in the first jhana, which is characterized by rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. Seclusion here means attention isn't pulled by the external senses. And what happens, and this is, I don't completely know why this happens. This is a nervous system thing that human nervous systems, when they're healthy, can do, which is that when attention is not pulled away and it just rests without moving very much in contact with the body in a non-distressing way, this really pleasurable energy can fill the body. And it's not that far away, actually. Many of you know this pleasure. And so the Buddha said, you know, he hadn't trained as a meditator. He was a kid. He was just a kid hanging out under a tree, doing that thing that kids sometimes do, where they just like get really into sitting there. He just gets really into sitting there, and he remembers it as an adult, almost dead. And he says, you know, that was nice. That was really pleasurable. Maybe that's the path. And then he thinks to himself, wait, I'm afraid of pleasure. Like, I've learned from this ascetic path to be afraid of pleasure. And he says, why should I be afraid of this pleasure? It doesn't harm anyone. It doesn't, it's not dependent on craving. It's not like I have to look at a beautiful thing, you know, to get it. Like, he was raised with wealth and entertainment, you know, lots of like musicians and young people dancing. He had a lot of beautiful things to look at and listen to. And this was not that. And he wasn't tripping out on the beauty of nature. He wasn't like, as I stared at the rose apple tree, I noticed that the tree was gorgeous in its blossoms. That would be conducive to craving, because the tree's not always blossoming. The tree's not always beautiful, and it's not always alive. But this wasn't that. This was a pleasure solely dependent on the attention being stabilized internally and secluded. And that's really important, because this is not what we would call a sensual pleasure. It's not a hedonistic pleasure, because it doesn't depend on getting something. It depends on not doing something. And that's really interesting. So if you can manage to sit still and not do anything, this marvelous energy comes. And so, I think it's just, sometimes I think rapture is just grace. Like, it's part of just what we have as animals, that like, wow, things are so hard, but if I can manage to just like not be neurotic for a minute and just rest, it's not just that it's restful, but actually my whole sort of bodily energetic spirit responds with this like swelling of lovely feeling. So there's that. So rapture comes. So this is breathe in and out, cultivating rapture, and then cultivate happiness, sukha, which is like deep contentment and ease. And again, it's based a bit on the conditions of, you know, being able to sit still and be safe and not oppressed in this moment. All of that is very important. But then to be able to rest the mind. So then continuing in that direction, step 7 is to become aware of the stuff in your mind, the citta sankhara. So citta is the heart mind. Sankhara, again, is volitional formations. In this context, citta sankhara, we can think of it as thoughts and feelings. Because thoughts have a subtle little volitionality behind them. You're thinking things for a reason, mostly habit. But habits have a little tiny burst of volition behind them, even the bad ones. And so it says, you know, okay, you've got this nice energy going, you're sitting pretty still, become aware of the stuff in your mind. And then the parallel step to step 4, stilling the bodily formations, is in step 8, stilling the mental formations. So again, the word is pasadhi, tranquility, pasabhyam, make tranquil, the citta sankhara, the stuff of the citta, the heart mind. So that means whatever thoughts are moving through, whatever storylines are motivating the heart, whatever emotions are moving around in the heart that are tied to narratives and stories, that are tied to things being stirred up, put those down. Just settle them. And you can do this by focusing more on the breath. So fill up the attention with the object. Or, and this is partly what I was really loving doing on retreat this time, you can also loop in the sense of silence and stillness. One of the things that happens a lot for me, and I think for a lot of meditators, is when I get going focusing on one thing, like the breath, I can get, so I'm staying with it, like I'm aware of every breath. I might even be labeling them in, out, or rising and falling. Or on this retreat, I was using the mantra Buddho, from the kind of Thai forest style. Bud on the inhale, Do on the exhale. It's a word, version of the word Buddha, awake. So you're saying it to yourself, awake, awake, awake. Super nice way to track the breath. So you could be staying with the breath, counting, using labels, but still the mind is thinking in the background, because you can think and be with the breath at the same time. You know, like technically in the Abhidhamma you can't, because you can only attend to one thing at a time, but really what you're doing is your attention is just pinging back and forth very quickly, and you can see two things at once. And this is really common. So I think I'm with the breath, but actually the thinking is just going on in the background, right? Is that familiar to anyone? And so one thing you can do here is, and that can just be frustrating, you know, because concentration is not actually really deepening. And I think what's happening is I'm kind of skating on the surface of concentration, but there's not really vitaka and vichara. I'm not really connecting and sustaining that connection. I'm lightly connecting, and then other things are happening kind of on the periphery. So I want a stronger connection than that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to connect with the breath, but I'm also going to, it's almost like listen for the silence in the mind space. So I'm going to listen to make sure there's not a thought story going on at the same time as I'm with the breath. So I'm tracking a couple of things, actually several. At this point in the sequence, I'm still tracking in and out breathing. I'm tracking the sense of the whole body. So I want to keep the energetic sense of the whole body present in attention. I'm tracking the relaxed energetic presence through the whole body, and I'm kneading the rapture into the whole body, right? It's in step 5 where you get where you bring in the image again that I used in the meditation, the image from the description of first jhana, where it says, just as a bath attendant or a bath attendant's apprentice needs water by dripping it into a ball of bath powder and then kneading it so that the entire ball of bath powder is fully saturated with water but does not drip. This is a very specific simile, right? Check out how precise that image is. He's like, what's going to exactly describe what I'm doing in meditation? He's like, oh, I remember when I was rich, somebody would prepare my bath and they did exactly this, kneading water into this ball of powder. That's what it's like. So in step five, rapture, that's what you're doing. You start to knead rapture into the whole bodily energetic space. So then you're kneading rapture and pleasure, piti and sukha, into the whole body so that it's saturated, moist, not dripping, but full with this rapture. Don't let any leak out. So you're tracking all this stuff, right? Whole body, breathing, energy, rapture, happiness, and I'm massaging it into the whole system. And then it's like, now stop thinking. And here, I think, is a thing that sometimes can be really nice to focus on. And on my retreat, this was one of the places I spent a lot of time to kind of trying to really practice with and hone in on and focus on, which was, while I'm doing all of that, don't let it become habitual where you can kind of like wander into a kind of shallow concentration and then the thoughts are bubbling in the background. Instead, I'm going to do all of that and I'm going to keep listening for the stillness of the mind, for the citta sankhara. And remember, just like with the body, that sankhara is volitional. And so there's a way that I'm going to stop intentionally moving the body. I'm going to stop intentionally moving the mind stuff. And that really means story. So, you know, I'm meditating, I think of something, I think of a friend, and along with the friend comes the impulse to think about a conversation that I had with them, right? Because thinking about them kind of pinged a narrative sequence that I have going on, right? That narrative sequence has volition behind it. There's a little doing in following that thread. And so stilling the citta sankhara is going to mean don't follow that thread in the same way that you're not following the impulse to move the physical body, right? So now we've got a really still and relaxed physical body, and we're going to work toward a really still and relaxed mind that's not following any impulse to talk to itself. And at this point, what we have is, if we've really settled the body and settled the mind, then the main thing we're doing is we're just staying with this kneading process, with the rise and fall of the breath, and with the kneading of rapture into the whole body. One of the things that people, I think, underestimate about samadhi practices in general is how somatic they often are. This one very much is. And how sensual they can be, and this one very much is. And you know, later in the Hindu and Sikh yogic traditions, and in the you know, Tibetan Vajrayana Himalayan tantric traditions, you know, this whole exact same process will be connected to what will later come to be called Kundalini, and it'll get connected to working with sexual energy. Sexual energy is just energy that has a certain manifestation in the body, but always what you're doing in the sexual yogas is contacting that energy through that very potent channel and then doing the same thing with it, spreading it through the whole body, lifting it up instead of having it be concentrated in one area, spreading it out, you know, moving it with the breath. All of this is going to become very familiar, you know, yogic technology over the next 1,000 years. But this is one of the earliest manifestations of it, right? This is still, you know, 400 or 500 years before the Common Era. So this is a full 1,000 years before the early tantras will be written. And it's like 1,500 years before the first Hatha Yoga texts will start to use breath holding and strong breaths to move energy around internally. But I think we can really feel a connection between the instructions in Anapanasati that are really telling us to cultivate this very, very awakened, vibrant, somatic, energetic presence, and then the cultivation that will come later. And this piece about thinking, I just think is really important. I won't say more about it because I want to open for some discussion here, but just that you've almost certainly heard in the insight meditation world and probably in the Zen world as well and in other places, Dzogchen, other things, that that practice is not about stopping thinking, but just being mindful of thoughts as they come and go. I think it's a fine instruction, but it's not a concentration instruction, and it won't help increase focus or and it won't help increase rapture. It won't help with this process of cultivating a deepening of somatic fullness, which is going to be so tremendously supportive as we build up toward deeper samadhi. So as we are working on samadhi, working on gathering the attention, honing our energy, kneading the rapture and pleasure born of seclusion into the whole body, it's actually very helpful to not just let thoughts come and go. I don't know about let. They want to do it. I don't know if I'm letting anything. It's really just like I guard the gate or I don't. And there is a very classic simile for mindfulness, that mindfulness is like the guard at the front gate of a city that only has one entrance in and out of a huge walled city. And the guardian at the gate, the doorkeeper, watches everyone coming in and out. And if they're wholesome, they let them in. If they're unwholesome, they keep them out. And so this is a simile for mindfulness having a protective function and not letting in the hindrances. And the thinking mind is so often veiling a hindrance. It's restless, it's anxious, it's worried, it wants a sensual object, it doesn't like something that's happening, it's doubtful. So the metaphor of mindfulness as a gatekeeper would actually say, don't tolerate those thoughts, don't let them in. Don't let them into the city. And the city is the body, of course, the body heart. Mindfulness is actually there to protect you from those, not just to observe them. So, and in Anapanasati, I think that's very much the case. The stilling of the Chittasankhara, the stilling of the Kayasankhara supports this deepening internal sense of the body as a very full, radiant field of a quite pleasurable energy. And as we go on into the next steps, there's really going to be then that's going to come become even more subtle, become aware of the citta and then gladden or bring joy and uplift to the heart mind itself are the next steps coming in the sequence. All right, so blessings from retreat and from the extraordinary pleasure of getting to hang out with beautiful people for 8 days, massaging rapture and pleasure into this old body. What a nice thing to do. So